Okay, we'll start the conference committee on Senate File 2368 and House File 2588. If this is all right with Representative Ward, I think we should start out by hearing about the fiscal note and hearing the reasoning why the fiscal note is the way it is from the department. I guess I'd like to probably hear that from.
I don't think you want me to pull the chair.
I think either that or you can just sit over here on this side. Just want you to sit in that third chair.
Yeah, I'd be, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wes Koister, I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Human Services. I can kind of walk you through.
I think that would be a good idea.
How the fiscal note was generated. What we assumed, the language requires us, the House language requires us to come to legislature for approval to close or relocate any enterprise service. And we have probably about 200 locations, various locations or more of enterprise services. So we have activity around closure and relocation every year. The construction of the fiscal note was basically based upon looking at the last 3 years of the activity that would otherwise be affected by this bill, looking at that as a trend. So we looked back 3 years. We said what activities of closure and relocations would have occurred in the past 3 years, which under this bill we would be required to come and seek your approval. We took the average cost of then what the delays would be in seeking your approval, and we applied that to the average annual cost of the act based upon a 3-year trend. We assumed that just by virtue of needing to receive approval, because these closure decisions are made throughout the year, or relocations decisions, there would be an average of 6-month delay. So for 100% of this trend, we assumed a 6-month delay. Then we went on to assume that once this request was in front of you, that you would approve 75% of our request to close or relocate. Now, we felt like we were taking some liberties in doing that, because in saying that you'll approve 75% of our request, we're anticipating legislative action, which typically we don't assume in a fiscal note. A more conservative approach to the fiscal note, and more probably more technical in terms of historic fiscal note discipline, would be to say that we would have to assume the continuation of costs.
I'm sorry, Senate calendar's been taken up. They've got a vote on the floor right now. Did anybody want to vote?
I think we'll just ask to be excused.
Okay, thank you.
Typically, a fiscal note does not anticipate future legislative action. And so that would have meant that of all the proposals or all the recommendations to close or relocate, we would assume that those costs would be indefinite. But we didn't feel like that was a very practical approach. So we looked at it and we said, well, you know, 50% of these are basically changes that we think would be easy to approve, because they may be relocations across town. They're very kind of simple sort of issues. And then there might be half of them that have more controversy in them, in that there might be some job loss attributed to them. There might be some relocation of staff attributed to them, and that you would approve half of the remaining half. So it's really a fairly liberal approach to the fiscal note. We tried to be practical in applying it, saying that you would approve 75% of the requests that we brought forward. But all 100% would experience delays. 25% would go on and be a cost through the remainder of the year. Then for the following year, we assumed the same trend, and even assumed that of those 25% that you approved the previous year, 75% of those would be approved to close the next year. So all along the way, we tried to be very practical and apply the law as we assumed would be intended, and in fact was concerned that perhaps we weren't as conservative as typical fiscal note discipline would require us to be.
Representative Warren.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. Mr. Koister, you had mentioned that you looked at a 3-year history.
That's correct.
You have about 200 programs currently left, enterprise
200 or more.
20 more left.
Yeah.
How many 3 years ago did you have?
Question.
I'm looking at staff. I don't have the number in front of me.
Let me re-ask the question, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, let me re-ask it. How many? Assuming that, I mean, that would have been part of your fiscal, as you said, that part of the fiscal documentation. How many were closed in those 3 years?
Here, Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, I have a document that shows the opening and closure activities of the enterprise programs that I'll just pass around. I think that'll help answer what you're getting at, Representative Ward. Here's a couple more. Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, I don't know that this gets exactly at a three-year picture. I could we can get you that information if you'd like that, because they went back and looked at the 3 years. We can give you exactly the program changes that were in place that contributed to the fiscal note. But what this document provides is both the openings and the closures. And the reason we did that is because your bill also strikes language that gives us the authority to open open programs without legislative approval.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I don't know if I have a question or more of a comment, and you're welcome to respond. Again, I don't know what this fiscal note has to do with anything, quite frankly, because you're assuming legislative intent in this fiscal note. The other observation, as it pertains to really either bill, particularly the House language, you know, we're already making projections, not only for the upcoming biennium, but for our tails biennium. So we're actually looking out about 4 years when we do our budgeting. I assume you're already doing that. I assume your financial directors and others are tracking every one of these programs. You already know the cash flows on them, in and out. You see the trends in and out. So I guess I'm having a hard time understanding why it would be so difficult to come to a finance committee in the House or the Senate, sit down and say, you know, we're projecting out over the next year, 2 years, 4 years, what you have to do for your budgets all the time. And we see a trend that's problematic at Brainerd or Aguaching or Wilmer or Anoka or anywhere else. And now we'd like the legislature to have that input. Number one, does the legislature want to close this safety net program? Because you are safety net programs out around the state. Or does the legislature want to fund it? And in which case, here's the fiscal note. All we're asking for you to do is come in and give us that opportunity. Not to leave here on May 19th and May 20th, you say we're closing a program in the next 3 months. And now our fiscal chairs or our members who represent those districts have absolutely no input whatsoever. And I guess I'm just trying to understand why you wouldn't know that in advance.
Mr. Corsair. Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, let me give you some background on what occurs within these programs. First of all, many of these programs are small. For example, most of the MSOX programs are 4-bed adult foster care homes. And we are under contract with counties in those homes. Sometimes we close those facilities because when we come to negotiations with counties, they say to us, we no longer want this service. Or sometimes they say to us, we want your service, but because we're having problems with county budgets, we're going to cut your rates by X. And then when we do the analysis, we say, we can't provide this service responsibly for that rate. These are all things that have happened to us in the past. And so then we have to make the determination of whether we go forward or whether we close that facility or whether we can negotiate something different with the county. So in many, many cases, because we rely on revenues, our viability to remain open and our timing to remain open is dependent upon, in many cases, the county or other payers. In other cases, we've had landlords say, we're not going to extend the lease on your facility, so we have to relocate. So we can't project out into the future exactly what closures will occur and what closures will not occur. And I would also add that when we have issues, fiscal issues within a program, our first attempt is to try to resolve those and try to either change staffing, try to talk to the counties about additional referrals that would maintain those programs in the future. And we did that with the CAPS program in Brainerd. With respect to the question about why it would cost money to ask the legislature to provide approval, is because it typically, from the point of making the decision to close, it takes us about 4 months to accomplish that closure. So any time that we would have to go to the legislature for approval would suggest there's going to be delay in that time frame. And we're experiencing a lot of other pressures in the enterprise services as well. We're seeing wage increases that are based upon union contract negotiations that are greater than what the existing COLA positions are. We have increased fuel and utility costs. So we can't go on and maintain a viable business in state-operated service, which it does play in the marketplace, and be required to continue to hold services open indefinitely. That the legislation that is in the House bill says you can't close. That's a change from current law, and that's why there's a fiscal note on it, because currently it's a four-month period of time. I think with respect to the safety net issue, I think you raise a good point in my opinion, and that's particularly a point with respect to the CABS program. We are required by law to live within our own receipts in the enterprise program. That's what the law says. And in many cases, that has worked to both the Minnesota citizens' advantage and to state-operated services' employee advantage. As you see, when I handed out what activities occurred over the last few years, there have been many, many more openings than there have been closures and relocations. It allows us to be agile in a community service marketplace that where the definition of safety net may be different in this county than it is in this county, and may be different tomorrow than it is today because of the availability of other private sector services. So this enterprise language, which requires us to live in the marketplace, has been a great attribute to Minnesota, a great attribute to the patients we serve, and a great attribute to our employees. On the other hand, there are situations, like in the CABS program, where it did not work. And I would suggest, as you're suggesting, that the question is, should this be a safety net program, is a legitimate suggestion. We couldn't continue to run that program through its own receipts and through the payers. Because there were no payers, there were no referrals. So that required us to move on.
Just to follow up again, back to my original point, If between January 1st and the end of May every year, you don't have an idea over the next 6 to 7 months what's going on in these facilities, that's a management problem. We need to understand. You didn't put the dates on here either when these things closed. I mean, I can sit here next to my friend Larry Howes, Representative Howes. Agua Ching was brought to the legislature over and over again. In fact, we're still working on things. So you did come. So that shouldn't even be on the list. Anything that happened during the legislative session shouldn't even be on your list. And beyond there, again, to usurp legislative oversight of what's going on based on total monetary loss of a lease or some kind of other business decision, as opposed to a patient decision or a safety net decision, which again is what we all are really having a problem with, is we're losing these safety nets out there, particularly in rural Minnesota. You know, when I look at these names on here, I see, let me see, White Bear Lake. I'm trying to see how many of these are in the Twin Cities, and that's the real problem we're having here. I don't see Anoka on here, but yet we see Brainerd. You know, I don't see the group homes in Minneapolis or St. Paul on here, yet we see Aguaching or Wilma Regional Treatment Center show up, or all these others in St. Louis County or other places. So, again, this list continues to be even more revealing than before, and I think it's a very interesting. Again, I'm missing the point on why legislative oversight cannot be accomplished here, and why you want to usurp that oversight process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, I think that most of our job growth in state-operated services has occurred in outside of the Twin Cities metro area. It's occurred, if you see the openings here, most of these are outside the Twin Cities metro area. Our security hospital that serves MIND in St. Peter is an area of growth. Our sex offender program at St. Peter and Moose Lake is an area of growth. We've moved our Minnesota Care operations to Brainerd, that moved 35 jobs there, and this was outside of our program area. It's in the healthcare eligibility program area, and we're expecting to expand that by another 35 or so positions. So I really think that the truth of the matter is that most of the job growth in state-operated services and in our programs has occurred in outstate Minnesota.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Koester, you're going to hear me say just a couple of things that you've heard in the past, but I think it's important that everybody hears that today, especially our Senate colleagues and other folks. First of all, there was a fiscal note done on this bill on House File 2588. March of 08, it came back with no fiscal implications. Now we have one in May of 08 with $3 million. Representative Junkie already alluded to that. I have a significant problem with the fiscal note as well. I want to state that publicly. The other thing that I have a problem with is in testimony during this whole House File 2588, you have indicated to us and your staff has indicated to us that we've been working on looking at and evaluating the Brainerd CABS program for 2 years. We've been looking at, we've had problematic situations there, they've been losing money, da-da-da-da. In that same period of time, nobody ever came to any of us. Matter of fact, I hold in my pile here three letters that I and Representative Junkie sent to you, one October 1st, one on November 1st, one December 1st, asking to please talk to us. Work with us. Let us be part of the problem solving as well and attempt to save programs for our children and our families. And what happened, Mr. Cuesta, is during your testimony, you, a couple of the House committees, you indicated, you used some statistics that were inaccurate. And you have owned up to that. You said, yes, we goofed up. That is a major problem with me when we're impacting children and families with information that is inaccurate or false or misleading or whatever. That is the purpose why I put this bill in, because I like my colleagues, want to have a dialogue with you to help our children and our families in all of Minnesota, but especially rural Minnesota. And I wanted to make sure that was, you know, talked about and discussed. And if I state anything wrong, I'd like you to say that.
Mr. Koester.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, we did make a mistake, and that mistake was an unintentional error about the percent of metro area residents in the that were being served in the CABS area. And I came to you, as you said, and said, we made an error. We wanted you to know that we made that error in that testimony. With respect to the issue of a safety net, we have a financial approach that has been authorized by the legislature that says in law that we have to live in our own receipts. I don't agree with this approach because I think that financial that law has allowed us to be very responsive in communities where we needed to be responsive. But if the intent is to have programs stay open indefinitely as a safety net, then I think that's the wrong financial mechanism. I think they should be appropriated.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Questor, I have a follow-up on that. That's it. And I agree with you. And in 07, in the House and the Senate, and Ms. McNerney, you correct me if I'm wrong here because you're the expert, not me, on this. But we passed Human Services bill that had some significant mental health appropriations in 07.
Correct.
But we never heard from you that this program that serves kids needs some more money or whatever. And I understand there's been the enterprise appropriations, and I'm agreeing with you. But in 07, we tried to help those situations.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, you know, I think that we've talked about communication, and I think that you've made you make a good point that we probably need to communicate better about what's going on. I will say, in our defense, though, in this situation, we tried to bring the budget in line with its revenues. We tried to change staffing patterns so that we were making attempts to make this program viable. We tried to change staffing patterns to make them seasonal, in order to bring them in line with revenues, and we were able to accomplish that for a brief period of time, but our caseload continued to decline. Then we talked to our payers and said, why aren't we getting the referrals that we need? And we were told, this isn't the service that we want to purchase. So, you know, during that period of time, we made attempts to do that. With respect to the money that was appropriated last session, which was a landmark mental health year, I believe. I think that the issue of service gaps still remain in mental health. We never proposed, when we proposed that initiative by the governor, we never said that it filled all the need. And I might also add that the legislature only funded half of what we requested. So it's not, we came with, I believe, $70 million in the current biennium, growing to well over that in the next biennium, and we were approved, and we were thankful we got the money we did, for $35 million. So we requested a lot more money than we received. This is actually even related to the whole Prairie St. John's issue in some sense, because the concern that's out there is a group of people for which there are no viable payers for that service. And one of the reasons that you, on the Prairie St. John's question, that you don't see people in the mental health world clamoring in support of that is because they know there are providers of those services for which there are payers. They know that Prairie St. John's is probably has a business model that says they're a profit-making organization, we have to make money. What they're concerned about is moving individuals for which there are payers away from safety net hospitals so that the only people remaining there are those that do not have viable payments. And there's a law that I believe is passed and signed that requires us to go back and look at the gaps, and I think that's a good study to use. So I think the safety net questions are really legitimate and really a challenge for both of us.
I'm going to have you suspend there. We're getting called up to the Senate floor, so we're going to recess to the call of the chair. Could be an hour, could be 3 hours. Probably have Ken send out an email.
Mr. Chair, just because I told them too, we want to hear from everyone that's in here to testify or participate, but it does no good to testify when people are coming and going. So we're all in and out today, all day long on the floors, and so we're going to try and coordinate when we're all out so we can all be here sitting in one spot so the testifiers, including the department, can have the ears of everyone, which I think is important.
That is right, and I know that Senator Cohen and Senator Bergen want to hear from Ask me, I know, wants to send a letter, so we want to hear that. So we're going to recess to the call of the chair. We'll send can you send an email out, like, on the whole system or something, or how does that work?
I can figure something out. Maybe if everybody, like, gave me their cards, I can email.
Or doesn't it, isn't there, can't you send an email out on the whole system? Does anybody know that?
Yeah, we can post it, but
we can post it.
To us, though, not...
No, we'll post it. We'll post it, but get him your email or your phone number.
Okay, we're recessed to the college chair.
We're on recess to the college chair.
Test. Test.